for more than 2 years, talk about the secret Pentagon UFO program known as ATIP has raged within UFO circles. Although controversy continues to brew about what ATIP really did, it is now undeniable that the Department of Defense does research unidentified aerial phenomena via a multi-agency task force currently operating within the Pentagon. So whether this task force is ATIP 2.0 or another research program entirely, the DoD is looking into a growing aerial threat that is invading military installations and threatening U.S. Navy pilots. Now that we've established something is being done about military encounters, what happens when commercial pilots run into the same threat? Although commercial sightings are not quite as intriguing as those that occur within the military, the Black Vault made a discovery of a little-known FAA database that proves these aerial threats do not just plague the U.S. Armed Forces. What's inside, and what do these encounters reveal? Stay tuned. You're about to journey inside the Black Vault. That's right, everybody. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and making this your live stream or podcast of choice. I do appreciate it. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., founder of the Black Vault, and I very much appreciate you guys taking the time to tune into this. Now, if you are watching on YouTube, you're going to help me out here. Definitely press that thumbs up button, smash that subscribe button, and turn the notifications on. That way, you never miss a video just like this. There's going to be a lot more content coming to this channel. So I do appreciate you doing that. If you're listening to the audio version, I do appreciate you tuning in. I know the podcast is pretty much how the majority of everybody listens to this. But so you know, if you're not aware, I do broadcast this audio live on YouTube. So you can watch, see the visuals. You might see me make a reference or hear me say a reference to something and I'm showing it on screen and it may be a little confusing in the audio version. Well, I try and make sure that it's not confusing, but if it is, just know there are visuals on that YouTube channel. How do you do that? www.theblackvault.com/live. That will take you right to the channel that you need to subscribe to. Everything is obviously free, so I do appreciate you doing that. It is a huge help to me. Now, I've been wanting to make this video for a little bit, and the short of it is I reported this last year. It was wildly popular because nobody had really talked about it before, and all of this stems around the commercial aviation side to unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs, or I like to call them by their real name, UFOs. Really silly, I think, to change the acronym. I get it. People want to release the stigma behind UFO. Sorry, guys. It is the same exact thing. So this is the connection between UFOs and commercial aviation. Now, we've heard a lot about military connections, naval fighter jet pilots that are seeing UFOs in the air, and they're encountering these objects, whatever they are. And last year, the Black Vault was proud to really report for the first time that the United States Navy has no idea what some of these objects are. They commented on three videos, which were just recently officially released. If you're not aware of that, check out this channel. I do have a video that is all about that release. But I did get the Navy to comment on them that they're unidentified. In short, military has no clue. But what happens when the commercial pilots see or encounter something? And this is that story. Now, as you could probably imagine, I have some visuals for you guys. Again, for those listening to on audio, I will go ahead and read through primarily what I am showing. So don't worry, you're not missing out too much, but I do recommend the live streams. Now, This is all about the FAA and UFOs. Now, this is the Federal Aviation Administration. For those who aren't aware, the FAA is really that government agency that controls and operates the skies. And I'll go over later about statistics and all that about how many planes actually are up in the air, and it's a fascinating number. But the FAA is the agency that really kind of takes control of all of that, watches you and I when we fly in the air, making sure there's no midair collisions. And as the skies get busier, the threats get even worse. Now, what I want to get into is a couple different things here. I did make reference to the in the introduction, a recent admission to a UAP task force by the United States military. Now, there's still more coming out about this, and quite possibly the next day after I post this video, I might have some additional information. I'm working on something. So depending upon when you're listening or watching this, make sure you check my channel, because there may be something else. As of right now, we don't know much other than that the Department of Defense heads a Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force. Now, this is a multi-agency effort. Now, I teased the part of the quote. Here is the full quote from Susan Goh from the Pentagon. She gave this to Roger Glassell, who's a Swedish writer and journalist. And I want to give a shout out to him for getting this quote first. Never been reported before. Roger was the one to bring this out first. Now, Susan sent him this quote. The United States Navy and the Department of Defense take these reports very seriously and investigate each and every report. Documented reports of sightings by military personnel form the basis for the investigation process. The investigation of UAP sightings by the multi-agency task force is ongoing. Now, this was given to Roger on May 18th, 2020, just to give a timestamp for you. So, May of 2020, this task force is in full operation investigating UAPs. How many, what frequency? We just don't know. Now, that's the military side. The commercial side's a little bit different. Now, last year when I did break a couple stories on the Black Vault, I had reached out in one of them, reached out to the FAA for one of them, seeking the information that they could give, if any, on unidentified flying objects. So, for example, what I wanted to know from the FAA is if a pilot, a United Airlines pilot, pick the airline, they're flying 35,000 feet in the air, all of a sudden they encounter something, what happens? Now, the very, very short and straightforward quote that I got from the FAA was the following. The FAA does not track UFOs. Please contact the National UFO Reporting Center, and then gives the address. Now, we know that that's run by Peter Davenport, very well known, not government funded, nothing to do with the government. And Peter does a great job collecting those reports. Last I heard anyway, I believe he's headquartered in Washington State, but I haven't checked in a while, so maybe he did move. But last I heard, Washington State. So that is where the FAA says, you guys need to go file your report there. We don't track them. We don't care about them. We don't investigate them. So let's use that as they're, you know, being honest. We'll assume that they are. And let's move forward and see if it actually holds water. I want to bring up a FAA manual. Now, this is a what they call Order J07110.65. I'm showing on screen revision Y. A very quick note. At the end, you'll see a letter. There's a lot of different versions of this floating around. As it gets updated and reissued with a more recent date, that last letter will change. So there's revision T, revision U, revision V, and as of the recording of this, the most recent version is revision Y. Now, that was August of 2019 when that was published. That is what I am showing on screen. In short, what this is the official FAA manual for air traffic controllers. So for those that are monitoring the skies at our airports nationwide, they use these FAA manuals as references and guides. And so this 7110.65, that is what ATC will use to ensure our safety. Now, Section 8, in the most recent revision, you can see up here, this is revision Y. This is still up there. Section 8 is all about unidentified flying objects and Very short and sweet, two small paragraphs. Essentially, it's telling you to go to the National UFO Reporting Center. Exactly what they told me in their statement. That is how it stands right now, but it didn't always stand that way. Let me go ahead and reintroduce someone and something in regards to a corporation on an organization that I've talked about quite a bit on this channel, Bigelow Aerospace. Now, Bigelow Aerospace's tie to all of this, for those who do follow the UFO phenomena, you know that the Pentagon UFO study that recently has been announced here in the last two and a half years, part of that contract went to Bigelow Aerospace. Now, this is a private firm in Nevada. Again, a lot of controversy here. Was it UFO studies? Was it more advanced propulsion methods and advanced aircraft? What they considered a forward-looking program into the future 40 years? That'll be a debate for a long time, I guarantee it. I talk about it a lot on this channel, but that's all I wanted to kind of say at this point about that portion of it. But Bigelow Aerospace, we know for a fact that they received part of that, what they call OSAP. That contract went to Bigelow Aerospace. Now, how do they fit in? Like, that's the military side, or so we believe, through the Defense Intelligence Agency military branch. What is their role in the FAA? Why am I bringing them up? Well, I just introduced to you a couple different FAA manuals. And what I did was I actually traced down order. This is 7110.65. All of the different revisions of this particular manual. Now, the one I showed you was the 2019 version. Prior to that was 2017. I traced them all the way back to 2002. I have them all on theblackvault.com if you are interested, and I'll go ahead and link to that in the show notes page. If you don't know how to get there, just go to theblackvault.com/show notes. Find this episode on the FAA and UFOs, and that will link you directly over to it. Now, what I want to do is go back all the way to 2002 and show you that there was no UFO reference at all within Revision M. And this was published in February of 2002. Now, fast forward, and I have the same date because the revision changes were the same. But in Revision N, you'll see this acronym here. This was a subsidiary of Bigelow Aerospace. Goes back even prior to ATIP, which started in circa 2008. So 2002, Bigelow Aerospace was able to get the FAA to get their subsidiary, the National Institute for Discovery Science, into the FAA manual to have anybody that, instead of going to Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center, to go to NIDS. So he was able to do that back in 2002. Here is Revision N, and this is how it was changed. He got his voice number in there, fax number, website, and details about NIDS. What's interesting is they said that NIDS would actually share data with the FAA. The FAA denies that to me, but it's very, very interesting that the FAA looks like they were interested in what NIDS was collecting in as early as 2002. Now, to go back to this slide here, this again was all of the different revisions. Fast forward to approximately when ATIP started in 2008. This also ties into the OSAP contract that went to Bigelow Aerospace. A lot of conflicting views here on the difference between OSAP and ATIP. I'll give you the official line. The official line is ATIP was the umbrella program. OSAP was the subset that was contracted out to the private sector, in this instance, Bigelow Aerospace. And in 2008, Bigelow Aerospace had contacted the FAA to change all references to NIDS and change it to BAS. Now, this was the new subsidiary, which was the one awarded the OSAP contract. So they were very active with the FAA trying to get their information in there. And then when OSAP/ATIP came around, to update it to make sure that BAS was getting every UFO report that was being reported to the FAA. Now, unbeknownst to me, I had no idea about ATIP when I filed this request, but I went after the emails that that were between the communications between Bigelow Aerospace and the FAA on those changes. So again, there's communications between the private sector and this government agency to make those changes. I went after them through FOIA and actually received every single communication. Now, the reason I bring this up is two reasons. One, so you guys know that it's there. I'm not going to read through it, but you can see the communications between BAS and the FAA to get everything updated. The second reason I wanted to bring it up is there is often a lot of talk about the fact that, well, since all this stuff went to Bigelow Aerospace, all of that stuff's going to be off limits to FOIA. This is my proof that that is not 100% true. It's partially true, but it's not 100% true. These are Bigelow Aerospace emails that I received through the Freedom of Information Act with their telephone number and everything. So this obviously proves that there are going to be documents connected to OSAP, which may ultimately be BAS records, but may be obtainable through the Freedom of Information Act. Spoiler alert, yes, I am going after those. But I just wanted to kind of bring this up in a very quick way to show you guys this is definitely obtainable through FOIA. Not everything, I'm going to stress that, but again, you will get probably some of the more interesting material since they are sharing and communicating with the government through OSAP and so on. This is proof that that theory definitely holds water, that private sector information is available. Here's how the revision T looked of the same manual. BAS was in there, updated information, so on and so forth. The FAA put all of that in there. Back to this slide. ATIP was allegedly canceled in 2012. So what I did was I traced all the way up to February 9th. The next, that was revision U. The next was revision V. That was not until 2014. Surprisingly, Bigelow and BAS were gone. Why is that? There is no explanation at this point other than if this was tied to the ATIP slash OSAP UFO collection, that kind of makes sense. So I wanted to at least show you guys a little bit of groundwork in history that these documents have Bigelow Aerospace references. And then post 2012, the next revision in 2014, Bigelow Aerospace BAS references were dropped. UFOs remain, as I already showed you guys in revision Y, but and National UFO Reporting Center remains, but BAS and Bigelow Aerospace references are 100% gone. Now, let me kind of now jump to why I was going after the commercial aviation side of all of this. And it seems to me, and this is very much unfolding still, so there's no definitive answer, but it seems to me that whatever unidentified aerial phenomena is, in large part, the military is trying to connect it to what are called UASs. UASs are unmanned aerial systems. Now, in other words, this is a fancy way to refer to a drone. It's kind of like the swamp gas of today. And I say that only half jokingly. It's like any UFO or UAP reference is almost immediately followed by drone. Now, the mainstream media often cuts that out, and then they just go unidentified aerial phenomena, and they just kind of cut out the rest where they talk about drones and so on. And I have mixed feelings about that. But regardless, it seems like there is this connection that they've been trying to kind of put together between the two. So what I did was I started sniffing around FAA documents, archives, filing FOIAs, seeing what I could figure out, because I figured there may be a connection with the wording. Let's just say that this is part of the cover-up. Hide it under a very frequently used phrase or term. UFOs could be hidden out there. Well, I think I finally had some luck last year and discovered a drone or UAS database that is operated by the FAA. Now, what was really interesting about this database when I started kind of sifting through it is that it wasn't only references to drones. Admittedly, they were primarily referencing drones, but I started finding UFO reports in there. I started finding references to flying saucers, saucer-shaped. I started finding references to oblong-shaped, kind of like a Tic Tac. So I was seeing these references going, wait a minute, this is kind of where they're hiding it. You know, again, maybe they're all drones for all I know. But regardless, remember that statement where they said we don't track UFOs? And yet this database was saying UFO, not drone. I'm not making it up. It literally said UFO. And so I'm seeing all these references. There's actually hundreds of them to unidentified objects of various types and descriptors that they use. And again, even the acronym UFO. So I knew that this is something that the FAA did not want into the forefront. So I published this article last year, got quite a bit of play out there on social networking, simply because this was something that was very interesting and new. No one had really connected commercial aviation present day to UFOs. Now let's talk about drones for a second, because this is what really was intriguing to me. The FAA has specific guidelines and rules that if you grab a professional drone, one that, you know, can fly outside and not just fly around your house with your six-year-old, which, by the way, my son loves those things. But if you get one of those big ones, what are the rules? Because these things, you can fly them in insane ways and distances away from where you are if you pay enough money. So those rules are quite a few extensive rules, but the two that pertain to my conversation now is that you can only fly 400 feet above the ground, and the maximum speed you can go is 100 miles per hour or 87 knots. Again, lots of other rules, regulations. I am not saying that is the end all of the rules. So if you're going to go fly a drone, do your research. I'm just talking about what pertains to here. So 400 feet above the ground. So what I did was I looked up the professional drones that you can buy. This was published this year by Drones Globe. It's a popular RC/drone website for enthusiasts and hobbyists and so on. That these are the top five highest flying drones that go up to 4 kilometers or 13,000 and change feet. So that's pretty darn high, that if you just stand there, send it up, you're looking at, you know, going 13,000 feet. Obviously, though, with FAA regulations, you can't do that. So the idea is that instead of going straight up, you go outward 400 feet, but you can go at a great distance. That's kind of the concept here for if you might be wondering, well, why can you buy those if you can only go 400 feet? Again, it's distance. And so the distance is you can go, you know, 10,000 feet that way instead of that way, and you're going to be okay. So that is kind of the breakdown of the more professional drones. I was surprised at how cheap they were. Only $400-$600 for some of these that are going, you know, 10, 12, 14,000 feet, 13,000 feet. But regardless, there you go. And there's a reason why I wanted to show you what they looked like. And again, these are the highest flying drones that you can buy in the private sector, according to this Drones Globe. Now, this database, I started sifting through it. Like I said, there were hundreds of references to these UFOs and various descriptors. I just want to show you guys a couple of them. I urge you to look at that database. There are literally thousands of sightings, and many of them, again, are absolutely drones, talking about four rotors at the top and maybe only seen 200 feet near an airport. Sure, that is absolutely 100% a drone. But let me just kind of throw some out there. Here's a gold saucer-shaped UAS that flew 100 feet below an aircraft, an aircraft's left wing at 5,100 feet in the air in Portland, Oregon. Here's another one from Chicago, Illinois. This one was flying about 100 feet. Two saucer-shaped, we'll call them UFOs, UASs, whatever you want to call them, but there were two saucer-shaped, black or gray, 100 feet from the aircraft, flying at 2,900 feet. Here's another one from Washington, D.C. This one was, let me see here, moving very, very fast. Sadly, a lot of these don't have speeds, so I can't compare it to that knot or 100 miles an hour. But regardless, this is a very heavily restricted airspace when you start getting into Washington, D.C. And yet here is a UFO. You can see him circling it there on screen. UFO at 150 nautical miles north of the airport in Washington, D.C. So you're seeing a lot of these, which could very well be drones, but highly advanced. And what are the odds that there are hundreds of these highly advanced drones flying thousands of feet in the air in areas that you can't be flying these drones in, and yet there they go, in and out. It made sense to me that that this is where the commercial side of all of this debate is hiding the UFO reports, the ones where we have no idea what they are. They're throwing them in a drone database, in my opinion, to just make it seem like, well, these are all drone and UAS sightings. And yet, I showed you the pictures of those drones. I don't see flying saucers going thousands of feet into the air. Is there a specialty shop out there that made a drone that's saucer-shaped that can fly 5,000-6,000 feet off the ground? Sure, maybe. I mean, anything's possible. But what's odd is the descriptors used for these drones don't match what we know about commercial drones and privately owned drones, but rather actually match the descriptors of those that are seeing true UFOs flying in our skies, including the pilots that flew within the USS Nimitz carrier strike group, and similar to those from the Roosevelt encounters, and I'm sure that there are many more. So it's a closer match to the descriptors to those UFO encounters versus what is available for a drone. Now, this is what's interesting to me. It's the same thing that drew me to why I was so interested for literally decades now on the connection between the military and UFOs and what that might be. And for years, decades in just my own research, but for decades beyond that, the United States military and government claims we just don't have an interest in any of this. It's not a threat to national security. We don't care. Don't bother it with us. And that's why I was so intrigued by the ATIP story when Mr. Luis Elizondo first entered the spotlight. I thought this is an amazing kind of capstone to this story that has gone on decades. It's sad that there is so much controversy around it. Again, that's a different topic and talk altogether. But that's why I really got passionate about it from the military side. The commercial side, I have the same questions. And sadly, the water is just as muddy. There's more than 16.1 million flights that are handled by the FAA every year. That's a heck of a lot more than the military. That's more than 44,000 flights every day. And during the peak times, there's 5,000 aircraft in the sky at any given moment. Now, wouldn't you think, for the same reasons that I was asking about the military and their concern about national security, wouldn't you think the FAA would be asking and just as concerned about these drones flying at thousands of feet in the air within 100 feet of the aircraft that you and I both fly when we travel? You would think that they would be concerned about it. They have a database that explains all of these UFO encounters, not even those that are obvious drones. I'm talking about the saucer-shaped, oblong-shaped, ones that don't fit or match drone descriptions. They're in that FAA database. Revisit this quote. The FAA does not track UFOs. Now, that confuses you. It confuses me as well. But regardless, that is what they want us to believe. And yet, when you search, when you investigate, when you research, when you look at the actual evidence, it goes against what they want you to believe. Now, will they one day admit that they as well have a secret program where they're looking into these objects because they don't know what they are? Who knows? I personally don't think so. But anything is possible at this point. But the fact remains that whatever these objects are, whomever is flying them, they are just as much of a threat to the commercial aviation sector as they are to the military. A lot of people out there don't like that threat word. They don't like the T word. But I 100% believe that whatever this phenomena is, it is a threat. And if I'm up in the sky, I don't want some unknown object coming 100 feet underneath the wing of my Southwest flight. That's just me, but I want to be safe up there. And the fact that the FAA is so adamant about saying we don't track UFOs and their documents absolutely prove the otherwise, then I think we got a little bit of an issue here. The same one that we have fought with the United States military through Freedom of Information Act requests and bombarding spokespeople with questions and even protests in the street when organizations do that. It's the same fight, and it's for the same reason. We need to figure out what this is, because that threat, even though people don't like to hear it, is absolutely real. That is the FAA connection to UFOs. As always, thank you so much for watching or listening. If you are on that YouTube channel, or excuse me, this YouTube channel, make sure that you do hit that thumbs up button and smash that subscribe button and turn notifications on. If you're listening on the audio podcast, I would really appreciate a review on iTunes or however you're listening. That is a huge, huge help to me both ways, on the YouTube channel and on the podcast platforms that you're listening to. So thank you all again. Really appreciate it. Much more content coming up, so stay tuned for that. I'm John Greenwald Jr. signing off. We'll see you next time.